Story time. Yesterday I was walking home down or up Fifth Avenue, I guess, and I was walking, there's the squeak right there. And so this guy in front of me had like headphones on or something, and he was walking down the street in front of me, and he looks over to the side of a building, and there's this dude like walking really closely to the side of the building with a dog, and the guy in front of me is like, he's like starting to wander over towards the guy at the building, and he was like, "Oh my gosh, are you blah blah blah?" And I like totally did not hear the name. I have no idea who it was. And the guy standing by the building was like, he like was like trying to hold his coat like over his head. I'm doing hand motions. You can't see any like holding it over his face a little bit. And he's like, "Why would you say that? Like my dog or something?" It's like super adorable, like white and brown spotted. I don't know. It was very cute. And then the dude was like, "Oh, no, I just, like, recognize your face. In fact, look who I'm listening to right now." And he, like, holds up his phone, like, right in his face. And I guess it was this guy's music or something. And I literally have no idea who the guy was. But I literally just encountered, like, the moment that, like, all New Yorkers dream to have of where they meet, like, some famous person that they love. I literally just had no idea who the famous person was.
And that person could use to
like it was not
hide their face.
It was like not a special occasion to me at all.
Gotcha.
But I just thought that was
that's funny. Yeah. That's interesting. Welcome back, everybody.
Yeah, welcome back.
Thank you for listening. Is the first thing I want to say to this episode and also our past episodes.
Straight transition to very serious.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We're done talking about Fifth Avenue.
Yeah.
Thank you. We got.
It's my favorite avenue.
we got a lot of listens on the last two episodes within just the first couple of days of them being out. So thank you so much for the support. Hopefully you guys seem to really, I think we said this last week, but you guys seem to really like what we're talking about this season. So hopefully we can continue to deliver.
Heard a lot of good reviews from some people I know. People are really enjoying what we're doing, and that's awesome. Truly appreciate it. If you do listen, just a little plug. We kindly ask that you would review, like leave a review or a rating or whatever that thing is. And then also give us a share to your Instagram story. We do post the question boxes, so if we do post it and you want to say something, we'll totally mention it. Unless it's totally inappropriate, then we won't. But yes. Anything you say, we will. Almost anything you say, we will mention on the podcast. But
the reviews really help us.
Yeah, yeah. Reviews totally help us.
No, okay. YouTubers always say that. The comments really help. Or like it's like I don't know why. I think a lot of them just say that. I do think like algorithmically on YouTube it does help to get comments, like statistics wise. But I think so many people
I don't know why YouTubers are so
it really helps get ratings.
They're so on people about turning on push notifications.
I think obviously. You get a lot of money from push notifications.
Oh, do you really?
Hey guys, press our push notifications for our
I don't know. I don't
but yeah.
Whatever, I guess.
Maybe
it's because it's like the first thing that they see on their phone, so they're like, "Oh, I guess I'll just watch this."
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, thank you for your support. And Aiden mentioned the boxes on Instagram stories. I have a couple of comments from people that don't have Instagram.
Sorry that I'm drinking coffee right now.
Yeah, so. Thank you for doing that right to the mic. This is from one of our listeners talking about the mustache combing at the end of Dial M for Murder.
Ah, yes, dude.
I'm going to read his thoughts directly.
Are we saying names or no?
Yeah. Hi, okay. Dad. All right. this is from my dad. I think the last scene signifies the inspector's almost arrogance, maybe too strong of a word. Brushing a mustache in that manner is a mindless act, almost a habit. So we just solved this incredibly complicated mystery after the potential murder victim was actually convicted and about to be put to death. So how does he react? With a mindless act of brushing. It's sort of a juxtaposition against how emotionally invested Tony, Margot, and Mark were in the whole thing while the inspector remained detached. So his brushing was as if he was saying, "Eh, another case closed." I may watch the yeah, and then the rest was just a personal message to me about the podcast. But yeah,
shout out Mr. Perrone.
Yeah, thank you for that comment, Dad. That totally makes sense to me. Something I didn't think about while watching it, but thank you for that input.
Yeah, very good insight.
So guys, this is just an example. Give us input, we might shout you out.
Now that we're on the page of parents saying something, my mom called me in between episode 2 and 3, I guess. And she was like, you guys are just doing so good.
That's like, so heartwarming. Shout out.
Thanks, Mom. She also said that she loves listening to Michael's voice.
Thank
she,
you.
She says she thinks that you can go professional.
Wow.
She didn't say that for me, but she said that for you. So.
That's so encouraging.
Yeah. But she's enjoying what we're talking about. So, you know, if Mom thinks so, if Mr. Perrone thinks so, then...
Yeah, yeah.
We've made it, folks.
Yeah, we've made it. That's all I needed. I don't need the fam. I just need the parents' approval. But yeah, jumping into our topic today. Last week, we announced that we're going to watch Uncut Gems, and we both did. And now we're going to talk about it. Yeah, we didn't really think about this before. Just a warning to any younger audiences. I don't think we have that many young audience members. But this is an adult movie. There's a lot of language in it. So just, we're not encouraging any of the young members of our audience to watch it. But it's a really good movie.
Very contrary to the movie that we're watching next week.
Yes, and I'm going to announce that at the end. Yeah, we're going to go a little bit more PG next week. That actually was just coincidental, I think. But
we're making up for it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But yeah, jumping into it. This was a movie. Actually, what's funny, this is a movie that I've seen Aiden hasn't. Aiden turned it off while watching because he wasn't a fan of it. But Aiden recommended this movie. This was his choice, not mine. So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I remember it was probably like a year ago. I tried to watch it, and it was just like so, like chaotic that I had to turn it off because I was like, it was making my heart race, and I was just like getting nervous, and I was like, okay, I don't need to be like this nervous right now.
I'm just trying to be entertained.
Right, I'm just like trying to find a good movie, and so I'm pretty sure I made it like maybe 30 minutes in when I watched it a year ago. And so I sat down to watch it in the first 30 minutes. You know, I remember what happens. And I feel like, you know, obviously the end is, you know, really chaotic. But I feel like the first 30 minutes is like setting the tone for how chaotic the entire movie is going to be. And I feel like that like almost intensity wise matches the end in chaotic energy.
Yeah.
and I remember it being that chaotic when I watched it the first time. The first 30 minutes, but I didn't think it was as chaotic. Like, it was still chaotic, but it wasn't as chaotic as I remembered. Because I think, obviously, because I knew it was coming, but it's also crazy that, you know, I can watch it a year later and still, like, have the same feeling of, oh my gosh, this is so chaotic.
That's something I mentioned to Aiden right before while we were talking about the movie a little bit, is this is my fourth time seeing it. I think the last time I saw it was in July. I watched it in July with a friend of mine. And it's still just as, like, I had a headache almost. Like, I could feel a headache coming on after watching because of how chaotic it was. And it wasn't so much in the sense of the first time I saw it in theaters, I was on the edge of my seat because I didn't know what was going to happen. Now it's chaotic mostly because of how much noise there is, how much talking there is at the same time of people just yelling over each other, you know, like the noise of New York City that they have in there, all that kind of stuff of, like, the sound design. And visually, too. It's a very chaotic movie visually. But, yeah, it wasn't even so much the story this time, but more just, like, the excessive, you know, like, sense stimulation that's being thrown at you was a lot.
Yeah. I was going to mention that as well. Looking back on it, I don't think that... I mean, obviously, there's a plot... And, like, it's good. But I feel like the plot isn't, like, that crazy, you know. I feel like it's almost like a basic plot, if that makes sense. But we're just, like, following along this super, you know, compulsive gambler who's, like, always looking for the next win in whatever, you know, category that is. And, I mean, I guess I mean, that's the plot. Like, we're following this guy.
Well,
but I think the plot itself is not crazy, but because Adam Sandler is in it and, like, is living it, that's what makes it crazy.
I think that there's a difference between plot and premise. The premise is extremely simple. This guy is in debt. He is stupid with money and owes these guys $100,000. That's the premise. The plot, I think, is pretty crazy because of, like, what happens to that money and what keeps happening with it. But yeah, I agree. It's like, what actually is happening is pretty simple, but, like, the amount of turns that they throw in there, you know, putting Kevin Garnett in the mix, that kind of stuff, like, that is all much more chaotic and, like, adds a lot to the story.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah. What, I was a big fan of this movie when it came out. I thought, I'll talk more about award nominations and stuff later, but I thought it was one of my favorite movies of the year. What did you think of it? Because I know you turned it off because you didn't like it the first time. What do you think of it now?
Yeah, it was pretty solid. I think I talked about the beginning already. The middle part I felt really slowed down a lot. Like, mm-hmm. I was able to, like, catch my breath a little bit. And it was, like, longer than I expected it would be. Like, the calm, air quotations, calmness was longer than what I thought it would be. And then the ending, I had spoilers. I knew that Adam Sandler was going to die.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that stinks.
But I didn't know how, in, like, what fashion that would take place.
And so the event is still surprising.
Yeah, the event was still surprising.
Spoiler alert. Sorry.
Yeah, spoiler. I feel like, you know, there's going to be spoiler alert in every episode. I mean, whatever. I told Michael before, I didn't really write down that much, like, note-wise, analysis-wise, because I was, like, so, like, in the zone while watching it that I just, like, didn't even think about or bother writing anything down.
I know.
But yeah, it was, like, really, really good. I think Adam Sandler was, like, the perfect person for the role.
Absolutely, which is so cool.
And, like, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it, but, like, just the idea of this guy who was, like, I mean, he was wearing, like, expensive stuff, like Gucci, whatever, and, just tossed one of his workers, like, the Gucci shirt at the beginning, but he just, like, felt super dirty and, like, you know, like, even, like, the grins that he has,
you can
tell, like, he's a dirty guy and, like, kind of, you know, and, you know, like, let's see if I can recall what happened. Gets the ring from KG after the opal, and literally, like, immediately after he gets the ring, he takes it to get money.
Yeah, no, that's what keeps you on your toes.
And then immediately, once he gets that money, he goes and places a bet.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, giving this guy's the money that they're owed.
Right.
And then they pull the bet out, which I thought was interesting. I don't know how that works. How you can, like, pull someone else's bet out. I think it went and
intimidated the bookie.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And then once he gets his hands on something else, I forget how he got the next load of cash.
Are you talking about the opal at the end?
Maybe.
Yeah, because at the end he sells the opal to KG and then bets it again on the three-way parlay.
Yeah.
On the Celtics game. Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, betting $165,000.
And the outcome would have been over $1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I am wondering where that money went and, like, what the girl did with it.
That's a cool thing about the movie was, you know, it was left open-ended. And just to talk about that, I mean, there's the ending scene. He gets shot.
Right in the face.
Right after he wins the bet, gets shot in the face. You know, the goons are, you know, ransacking his jewelry shop as he's laying there bleeding. And Julia, his girlfriend, is at the casino, and you see, like, the dude that she was with in his hotel suite get the cash and walk out. And I remember watching that for the first time, being like, "Did she die? Like, did he kill her or something and take the money?"
Yeah, I thought that that guy was like working for. But the that same
movie,
people.
The movie does that so many times, where it you think for even a split second, like, "Oh, what? Something's gonna go wrong here because this movie is the only thing that's going wrong." When he's hiding in his apartment, waiting for Julia to come home, I remember thinking she's gonna come home with another dude or something, and like, because she thinks he's not there yet. And so, like, they do so many, even, like, the little character parts that aren't even really about the plot are tense. And, like, there's so much skill in doing that. And that's one thing that just drives the movie. You know, you talked about these quiet, casual moments that felt longer than you thought. And I agree. I think, like, the middle of the movie is really long. But, like, even you know, the Passover celebration at their house is tense. As, you know... Arno is there, you know, and like there's so much tension between him and Adam Sandler's character, Howard. So yeah, even these quiet moments are super, super tense, which really drives the movie.
Yeah. Wanted to talk a bit about sound editing. There were several moments where it's so, I mean, it's pretty good throughout, like in general. I think the way that they were able to establish the chaotic energy that's like driving the film is just through like the bunch of different layers. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you said, New York City sound plus like the buzzer for the double door or whatever in this thing that's so loud, and all these people like
people shouting at each other.
People shouting, and like you can hear conversations of like other people buying stuff in the store, and like there's also several points where he like walks into the back room, and you like I had headphones in while I was wearing it, and you could hear like it switching from left to right.
Yeah.
Audio, and I thought that was really cool how it just panned through the two earbuds. And then there was one scene, I think it was the like right after the auction. Whenever
he's throwing the fountain.
Yeah, whenever he's throwing the fountain.
I noticed the sound design of that scene too.
Yeah. I think also whenever he got like punched in the throat or whatever, the sound became a little muffled as well.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that was just like his voice, like after being punched, like him just trying to catch his breath or whatever, or if we were supposed to be hearing what he was hearing.
I think that was an audio effect that they put in there. He gets punched in the throat and like there's a loud punch noise and all of a sudden everything's kind of stunned for a second.
It's a little
hazy. Slowly
comes
back in as he follows them and starts to, you know, shout at them. Then they throw him in the fountain, and when it cuts to him sitting in the fountain, you just suddenly hear like these loud water noises.
Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure you become submerged.
Yeah.
At some point.
Exactly. And I agree. I think the sound design was so well done. And like I said before, like it is so much of the tension of this movie. It like the chaos is just people yelling over each other. You know, I think of like the car scene where they're stripping his clothes off to leave him in the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to tell them like, I won this bet. And eventually, you know, they say we took the bet off, you know, but you know, he can't get his point across because of how much everyone's yelling.
Yeah.
And that's just what the whole movie feels like, is like, why don't you just settle down and talk to them? And like be smart. That's what this whole movie is.
Yeah.
But he just keeps going. Yeah. And that's what makes it so chaotic.
Yeah, totally. Let's see. I want to talk about the opening scene.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about his family.
Yeah.
And I also caught a continuity error.
Okay, interesting.
Which one would you like to talk about first?
Let's talk about all three. Let's go opening scene first, because I got some stuff to talk about there too.
Opening scene, was kind of confusing to me a little bit.
Okay.
But it was interesting how, you know, like the title scroll or whatever is through the gym and all the different colors, and you can see the color of the universe or whatever.
And his colonoscopy.
Yeah, and his colonoscopy. And at first I was like, wow, that's kind of a weird transition. But then I was wondering if like maybe like the opal and him are like the same.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
In what way?
And like, I don't remember exactly what I was thinking when I wrote it down, but like, It was more of like a question than a observation.
Let's try to break that down.
Like, I wrote down, does that mean anything? Question mark?
No, yeah, yeah. Okay, so what's this opal, right? It's a rock. It just looks like a rock until you uncover certain parts of it. And then it's this beautiful opal that you can look into and like see the universe. It's like what how they describe it. I was thinking about this, and I think that there are... You said it. Like, he's a dirty guy. Like, he's kind of slimy. Like, kind of a jerk. Like, well, no, I don't even know if I'd describe him as a jerk. Like, he cannot go straight. He has to make bets.
Yeah.
He's not good to his
family. Literally cannot help himself at all.
But then, like, you know, like, he, like, there's glimpses of kindness throughout the story. You know? And, like, you could say there's ulterior motives, but, like, he wanted to help, KG, and he wanted to give him the opal, like, just to lend it to him. For a couple of days, and there's little glimpses of him trying to be good to his kids, his oldest mm-hmm. daughter in particular. He tries to connect with her, you know, tries to like have a relationship with her. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, that all stems from him being a bad father. But like, maybe there is something there where, you know, he is on the outside the way that the movie makes him look, but you know, he's also got a bit of. Ultimately, he makes $1 million. Like, he's this gem, you could say. But, you know, it all, you know, his bad outside catches up to him and he gets killed for it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Wow. I think you're onto something there, mate.
Good analysis, man.
Thank you. I don't know. That might be stretching it a bit. Maybe the viewers can comment on that.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be interesting to hear what other people have to think.
But then you said... Oh, for me, for the opening scene... I remember going into this movie, I remember only seeing the poster, not seeing a trailer or anything. But I was like, okay, an Adam Sandler drama, I'll go see it. And not knowing anything, I'd never seen Good Time, which was the Safdie's previous movie, the Safdie brothers who directed and wrote this. And so I did not know what the vibe was going to be like, the tone of the movie. So I think, I mean, it's an ancient storytelling tradition to throw people in the middle of the story. So you throw people in the middle of, you know, Ethiopia in a mine. And, like, I was like, what is this movie? This is not what I expected. But then the rest of the movies, you know, take place in New York and Philadelphia. So I kind of like that they just throw you in. And then when you go to New York, he already owes these guys a bunch of money. You know, you're right in the middle of things. And, you know, his opal comes and, like, you instantly make that connection back to Ethiopia. But, yeah, I kind of liked the intro. And the ethereal movement of the gems that again turns into his colonoscopy footage. But like that, the gems, I remember watching it being like, oh, this is an artsier movie than I thought it would be, which makes a little bit of sense because it's A24. And again, yeah. I had never seen a Safdie Brothers movie, and Good Time is very similar in terms of art style and cinematography. But... Yeah, I think that's what made this movie so good was you have characters like Adam Sandler, who, A, you're like, wow, what a great drama actor Adam Sandler is. I didn't expect that. But then you also, it's like, oh, this movie's very artistic. This is a very artsy movie. Mm-hmm. And so I think all those elements combined worked so, so well for like the subject matter, which was a guy that runs a jewelry shop.
Yeah.
And that was so cool.
Yeah. I remember my thoughts now about the opal. Almost not necessarily from the opening scene, but you kind of gather throughout the film the same way that Kevin Garnett is like attracted to the opal because he thinks it has some magical power. And like whenever he stares at it, he feels like, you know, he can go drop 40 or 50 or whatever against the 76ers, which he does. Yeah. but also like, I guess kind of similar to what you were saying, like the more, like if you go into this guy's shop, Howard's shop, the more that you talk to him, the more that you're persuaded to like want to have it or like want to buy it or whatever. And, like the deeper you go, the better quote, air quote, treasure you find or whatever.
Sure.
But yeah, super interesting.
Yeah. It's a good title for a movie.
Yeah. It's hard to, like, we talked about it last week. I mentioned Breaking Bad and how, like, you kind of root for Walt even though he's the bad guy.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like, you know, this guy is so chaotic. He's doing it to himself, and he's, like, making all these poor decisions, but at the same time, you want to root for him so bad.
Yeah.
To come through. And at the same time, I also felt really bad for him for, like, his family's situation. Like, his wife, shout out Elsa. Yeah.
The Nidel Dazin.
Yeah.
Idina Menzel, I mean.
I felt bad for him for his family situation and, like, how his daughter was, like, not giving him the light of day or anything.
Sure, yeah.
Even though I know that, like, what he does is, like, what ruined...
It would have been his fault, probably, right, is what you assume.
Right. Is, like, the reason that his family is so broken or whatever is because of him. But I still felt bad for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I should have felt bad because I, like, can infer from the movie that it was probably his fault. I mean, he was cheating on his wife and...
Obviously so focused on business compared to his family and, yeah, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I know what you mean. No. Aiden dropped his notebook.
Second time. Golly. yeah.
I mean... Yeah. I mean, I agree. You don't root for his actions, is what I'll say. You want him to, like, come out on top. You do not root for his actions, which is interesting. I don't know a comparison to another movie. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I don't know. In comparison to Dial M for Murder, you know, Tony, you kind of... you still don't root for his actions. You don't want him to murder his wife, but you want him to come out on top. I did a little bit. But, yeah, this movie, like I said before, was all don't do that. Just give them the money. But, you know, you want him to come out on top.
It's like one of those horror movies where you're like, no, why would you hide in that room?
Yeah. Exactly. What else do I have here? One thing, or you had one more.
Yeah, I mentioned I caught a continuity error. Towards the beginning, when KG gives Howard the ring, in exchange for the opal, you can see KG, like, turn around with the opal in his hand. He's, like, looking at, like, holding it up, and he's looking at it. And for one shot, you can see the ring still on his finger.
Really?
Just, like, I think it was on his left hand, and he's, like, turning to his left, so it's on the far side of the opal, so you can't see it that well. But, I mean, it's so large and bright and shiny.
You're sure that was after?
Yeah, 100%. Because he was about to leave. He, like, turned around to leave. So he had, like, exchanged the ring, and then he turns around to leave. And the ring, you could still see, like, probably, like, the top third of it.
Okay.
Still on his finger. And then I think it cuts back to Howard, and it cuts back to KG, and the ring is not there.
Interesting.
So I don't know if that was just, like, oh, like, this shot of him turning around turned out better or something like that. So you always love finding the errors in there.
I know. You
got to put,
yeah.
It's like, oh, I figured it out.
Yeah, I have written here that he was trying to be better to his family. Like, that was just something that added to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Him trying to be good. And, you know, after, you know, he thinks he's broken up with Julia, he goes back to his wife. And he's like, hey, let's try to make this work. And obviously that's after he broke up with Julia. So, like, he cares more about his wife more. But, you know, there are glimpses of him trying to make it work. We talked about this last week, something I wanted to point out. We talked about revealing information before its explanation last week with the scissors, with the keys, you know, revealing that Tony had quit tennis and, you know, had been better to Margot, talking about, like, the letter that Margot lost and then revealing that Tony had it. All that stuff, revealing information before it's explained.
Yeah.
That happens a lot here, subtly. Very subtly, you know, there's a lot of even before the door comes into it, like the door not working, because the first person gets stuck in the door is KG, right? And even before that happens, you know, they show the operate how the door works. They show someone pushing the button and the door opening, and that all, of course, leads up to Arno and the thugs to be like stuck inside there.
Mm-hmm.
Stuck in between the doors. And so like they revealed that this door has issues working, you know, and it seems like just another tension builder, and it is for those moments, but then it ultimately leads up to them sitting in there during the Celtics game. Leaning on the glass was a big one. They talk about don't lean on the glass a few times before Kevin Garnett breaks through it, and he says, that's a sign, I need to buy this opal.
Yeah.
The Michael Jackson pendant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these subtle things that just raise the tension. He pawns this Michael Jackson pendant that's later revealed that another jewelry seller wants to sell it to The Weeknd.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's such a small thing that only comes up twice in the movie, and yet, like, it's information earlier that comes up later.
Yeah, on the note of that, like, just as a whole, how that, like, fits in, it was just, like, every opportunity where you think, like, Howard's, you know, calmed down a little bit, some dude comes up to him and was like, hey, you owe me this or whatever. And then, like, he gets into the club with The Weeknd, and you think that he's going to find The Weeknd and try and, like, bargain something or sell something or whatever, and then this dude walks up to him, he's like, hey, need my necklace back, or
the amount of times he sees Lakeith Stanfield's character and is like, he's like, oh yeah, sorry, I don't have the opal.
Yeah,
it's like, oh my gosh. And then another one I was going to mention was on that, the Michael Jackson pendant note of just small things that raise the tension, another one was the results of his colonoscopy.
Yeah,
like it's something that like is a phone conversation that raises the tension later in the story, and it has nothing to do with the story,
mm-hmm.
but it's just something in there to add more texture.
Yeah,
and then finally,
more noise.
Finally, revealing the antagonist a little late in the movie, past the first act turn where it normally is introduced, you have this. You have. Arno was his name, right?
I don't really remember names.
I think that's what they're Arnold. I think that was his name, but. You have the antagonist. They reveal when he gets stripped in the car and left in his trunk. Later revealed to be an in-law. Like, that was massive reveal.
Yeah.
And it's like, I remember seeing that for the first time. Like, oh man, like he's in his family.
Yeah.
And that isn't brought up until, you know, over halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
Which is a big reveal. So this is another great example of, I think, just good writing. With both Dial In for Murder and this, of just, you know, revealing information before explaining it.
Yeah.
It was really big.
Yeah.
I already talked about the opening credits, which was the opal scene of just like the ethereal images, reveals. It sets the tone as artistic and just very, very highly stylized. It wasn't like anything I've ever seen. It wasn't 80s, you know, because it kind of had a little hint of that vibe, but it was very, very stylized. And it was also humorous because it did turn into, like, his medical examination.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of introduced, like, the humorous side of the movie, because there are some, like, kind of funny parts amidst the chaos. So, that was really good.
I was gonna toss in there as well. When those three guys were stuck in the double door or glass box or whatever, he pulled out the gun, and I was like, why don't they just like shoot the glass and then it breaks and then they can get what they want or whatever? It turns out the glass is bulletproof.
And that gun is the reveal for like,
10 minutes
later he's gonna get shot.
Yeah. And on that topic, I found it super interesting that they like. Whenever they open the door or whatever, that shift in the power where the guy with the gun like kills the Arno or whatever his name is, the head guy, and then just takes everything. I don't know if that was just like a matter of, you know, the head guy just like irritating the guy with the gun, or maybe the guy with the gun was like super frustrated with Howard and the head guy was like, yo, okay, maybe let's not pull out the gun. Let's just, like, get what we came for and we'll leave. And he was like, no, like, I was just locked in a box for 3 hours. I'm not going to, like, chill out.
It was, I think, unexpected because you see in Arno's face when the Celtics game's over, he's, like, he's not angry anymore.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was mad at Howard, but then it's like, okay, I'm going to get my money.
Yeah.
Good job, Howard, even though I hate you, whatever. But that's just not the the other guy's, you know, mission.
Yeah.
Like, he was this angry guy who, yeah, wasn't going to be locked in the box without consequences. And when his boss was resistant to it, he just killed him and proceeded to rob the shop and get out of there. So, yeah. I mean, the third act is so well done. And I did not expect him to die, especially in that way.
Yeah.
It's surprising how quickly it happens every time. The guy gets out of the double doors and shoots.
Yeah, literally, like,
in one movement.
Literally, yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about, well, there's still a couple of things, but I have here briefly, it hits the highs and lows really well. To keep a movie flowing, you need highs and lows. You need characters to have, you need characters to have good moments and bad moments, and this does that super well. You know, we already talked about there's moments when you think that they, you know, won money, and you're like, okay, they're out of it, and then, you know, the bet's called off, or the auction doesn't go well, or, oh my gosh, he's going to send his money to a casino again, you know, all that kind of stuff. So highs and lows were done so well in this movie. But one of the, well, I guess I'll just go through my list. Dialogue crafting was incredible. Like, there's so much screaming over each other. And, well, there's two different types of scenes that are chaotic. There's the screaming scenes, when that is scripted, I think. It's like they're just yelling at each other. And, like, I think that's, I'm not going to say it's easy, but, like, it's easy enough. It's you've seen that in movies before, people yelling at each other.
Yeah.
But there's also scenes, one in particular, where he goes to his bookie at the restaurant to place his first bet. And they're just like, it's like a chaotic conversation. The guy's talking to other people in the restaurant while they're talking to each other. He's on the phone texting and trying to communicate with someone else while they're having a conversation. And yet these words flow so easily. And it seems improvised. It seems really natural. And I think that's good directing. I think that's really good acting. I think that that's really good writing. I think that's a really good job of being flexible on set. Because surely, in editing as well, I mean, the way that these conversations and the sounds edited together makes these really chaotic, jumbled conversations with a lot of information in them, you know, come across clear. And, you know, that's a product of editing. And you know, being flexible on set, what I was saying is, like, it, you know, you want to stick to the script, but you also need to get your point across. And I'm sure there was some sort of improvisation in there at some point.
Yeah.
And do something to say, because I can.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think one of my favorite parts with just, like, the script and the layers and everything was the phone call from the doctor when his, I forget the guy's name.
Howie?
Howard? No, not Howard. The guy that, like, brings the people into the shop.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember.
It's like Demaney or something.
Yeah, Lakeith Stanfield is the actor's name.
Sure. yeah, okay. I don't remember his name. That guy, he's cracking into the safe trying to get his stuff because he's like, okay, I'm done. And he finds out that his watches have been, like, sold or gotten rid of or whatever. And, you know, Howard's trying to, you know, get the news from the doctor, and, you know, while he's on the phone, it's on speaker, you know, there's another work in there, like, cleaning stuff, you know, jewelry, whatever, and then this guy who's looking in the safe is, like, yelling at him, like, F you, you know, blah, 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 and there's just, like, I mean, it's so hard to, like, pull apart, but at the same time, like, it's put together so well. Like, that was, like, one of my favorite parts of just, like, the script coming together. But
there's never one thing happening at the same time.
Yeah.
When his, you know, assistant at the jewelry shop comes in to yell at him and say, you know, I'm done here. I'm getting, like, beat up. I'm getting, like, harassed. I'm done here. You know, he's opening up a package of fish to find his opal inside.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's never one thing happening.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps it so tense as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to talk about characters because I was just talking about, like, the good acting. And I think, yes, good acting, but ultimately good directing, because a large number of this cast are not actors. You have Adam Sandler, who's obviously an actor, but is often not in movies like this.
Yeah.
And he was a surprise to everyone, I think. He had been in the Meyerowitz Stories by Noah Baumbach on Netflix, and was good in that. And it was a drama, but Punch Drunk Love, I guess, too. But, you know, obviously he does mostly comedies. But you have Kevin Garnett, former NBA player Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
Really good in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, you could argue that his role didn't require that much, but, like, he was in lots of scenes and it was really natural.
Yeah.
Julia Fox, who plays Julia, Howard's girlfriend in it, is not an actress. And this is her first movie, I believe. The Weeknd was in it. A brief role. Yeah.
I will say his Super Bowl performance is better.
Okay. But Phil, the guy that shoots Howard at the end, this is his first movie. He was really good in it.
Yeah.
Mike Francesca, who's a radio host, was his bookie. The pawn, the jewelry guy who quits near the beginning of the movie is a real jewelry salesman in New York.
Wow.
The guys at the pawn shop, I believe, are also not actors, but guys that they're pawn guys.
Yeah, wow.
And the guy at this casino in the helicopter who Julia hangs out with in his suite, he's not an actor either. He's a producer.
Wow.
And so you have all these characters in it. And I think that's why it felt so natural at times. It's like we talk about this dialogue that feels very improvised, feels very natural. It's like, I think these are all non-actors. And it's just and you can't stick a non-actor on screen and say, read these lines.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a lot. That doesn't turn out. It takes a lot of great directing. And it takes a lot of, knowing these people and like knowing what is going to get the most realistic performance out of them. And I thought that they did. No part of this movie felt fake to me. And there's always movies where it's like something is like, oh, I don't know if that feels super real. But, you know, it was just such a good performance, I thought, from everyone. I was going to talk about one of the actors specifically, I thought. But I don't have anything written down. But, yeah. I did want to talk about nominations.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't know exactly. I know that there's criteria for getting nominated in terms of festivals, what festivals you get into, and you have to push for nominations a lot, specifically for actors. You have to, like, really vouch and say, I want to get nominated.
Yeah.
Which was, like, for Avengers Endgame, a lot of people wanted Robert Downey Jr. to get nominated for Best Actor. He didn't want to pursue it. And you have to, like, really campaign for something like that. But here's what I think.
I'm ready.
I think that Adam Sandler. I think that Adam, like, just Adam Sandler, not even, because there's a lot of good roles in this movie. But I thought that Adam Sandler could have been nominated for Best Actor, next to the other nominees of that year.
What year did it come out?
These were the. It came out in 2019. It was the 2020 Oscars.
So it was along with.
Let me see.
I forget who was nominated for that. That was the year of, like, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite, all that jazz, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I forget who won Best Actor. Wasn't it
Best Actor was...
Wasn't it Joker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe so. Shoot. So you have movies of the year were Joker, Ford vs. Ferrari, 1917, Parasite, Once Upon a Time,
yo, what's his
Irishman,
name? Little Joaquin. What's his name?
Joaquin Phoenix?
Yeah, Joaquin. Okay.
Yeah. Jojo Rabbit, Marriage Story. You have good movies that came out. It was a really good year for movies.
Very, very good year for movies.
But I don't think Uncut Gems should have been left out of that.
Yeah.
Cinematography was Darius Kanji, and he did Delicatessen, which I believe was nominated years ago. And fact check me on that because I'm not sure. But the cinematography I thought was amazing. It was anamorphic. It looked so pretty. And again, the movie was so stylized, and I thought that it should have been nominated for that. I said acting, directing, like I just talked about. I thought that the directing was so skilled. Original screenplay, the writing was amazing, I thought. Again, it seemed like it was like difficult to write. The scenes of just yelling at each other, you know, the amount of things that intercut, things always happening at the same time. I thought the writing was so well done. Nominated. And then we already talked about sound editing, sound design, and visual editing. I thought was all so well done. You don't notice the visual editing at all in this movie, and that's kind of the hallmark of why editing is good, or the criteria for good editing. And there are so many things I think this movie could have been nominated for that were right up there.
Snubbed.
Yeah, I think this is the biggest snub ever. And like all anybody ever talks about is Adam Sandler should have been nominated. It's like, I think you can maybe argue against that or argue for it, but there's at least five other categories where I think it could have been nominated. Again, it has to do with the festivals you go to. It has to do with the bureaucracy, and I don't know enough about that, but Uncut Gems should have swept.
Okay. While you're speaking there, that just one point had four things come up.
Okay.
I didn't write any of them down, so hopefully I can remember. Script writing was impressive, you said. I agree. And I think it's also, I mean, again, I don't have super experience on in the film industry or whatever, but I feel like trying to convey the chaos through script has to be difficult. Like, I feel like while you're like reading it from the paper, you know, like you have Adam Sandler's lines, but then also you have all these other characters that aren't important to the story or the scene or whatever, yet they're all having, you know, all these things. And I, like, you know, in writing, whenever like someone interjects someone, and it's just like a dash and then the line is underneath of it. Like, it would be insane to like go back and listen and to the table reads and like what that would have been like to get it to where it was. I just feel like that would have been super interesting.
And that's a product of, again, good directing. And it helps that, you know, the Safdie brothers wrote it and directed it. They wrote this with their vision in mind and then were able to go out and like achieve that vision on this on set. And that helps, you know, but you're right. It's crazy.
Yeah. Another thing, I was reading, I like to read some reviews after I watch movies. Read a review or an opinion article or whatever. And this dude said, I don't know how much I agree with him, but he said that like Adam Sandler's performance was like top notch. And apparently Brad Pitt and Adam Sandler were like together in an interview or something. And Brad Pitt said that like that performance was great. And it wasn't because, you know, the movie or whatever, like Adam Sandler, he said that Adam Sandler is like a top tier actor, 100%. It just matters like what material you give him.
Sure, absolutely.
And you can make that case for any actor, I would say.
Yeah.
Most actors. But I mean, if you look at some of the, I mean, the only movie I can think of off the top of my head that Adam Sandler's in is Grown Ups for some reason, which is like a good, like comedy, whatever, but it's like, like it's not, it's supposed to be funny. It's not like a movie that impacts your life in any way, you know?
Sure.
So I think, you know, I would agree with Brad Pitt, you know, like I would say that Adam Sandler is probably a top tier actor and he was given really good material. Like you said, that should have been nominated. And, you know, something else I was going to say, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't think anyone else could have done as good a job as he did.
Yeah, it's you have to be right for the specific role. You think about, like, Brad Pitt is very much the same in most of his movies.
Mm-hmm.
And you say the same thing about Adam Sandler in his comedies, obviously. But, you know, there are stand-up performances by every actor. It's like a lot of actors are very much the same in every movie. And then, you know, you look at one performance, it's like, wow, they were really different in that. And it like, it really stands out. And that's exactly, I think, what happened here with Adam Sandler.
Yeah. And then forget the third thing, but the fourth thing that I mentioned, me being a sports nerd, the NBA released their all-star starters and reserves, whatever, for the all-star game for the season. And I feel like this happens every year, but they release all the players that made the All-Star game. And then immediately players take to Twitter and they're like, oh my gosh, so offended that like this person missed it over this person. Like, oh, this person got snubbed. Like they're having a better season, blah, blah, blah. And then like a bunch of like, not a bunch, but you know, several ESPN, you know, personnel that have shows or whatever, they're like, okay, yeah, like these players got snubbed. They probably deserve to make it. But at the same time, you have to look at the list of people that did make it, and you have to pick, you know, which one you think shouldn't have made it to replace. And then would you have the same argument about switch they made? And so, like, yeah, Uncut Gems was a super good movie. Probably should have gotten some kind of award.
Yeah.
But when you put it up against Marriage Story, Parasite, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Joker, the list goes on. You know, at some point you have to say, what film would you take out of that set to put Uncut Gems in?
Joker is my answer.
Do you not like Joker? I haven't seen it.
But I like Uncut Gems a lot more. No, and again, you're totally right. And that's just me. That's my opinion.
Right. Is there like a cap for
the Oscars? Yeah, there's a short list, and there's they like to keep. You'll see it, like, sometimes it fluctuates a tiny bit, but they like to keep it.
Weren't there like six films for best screenplay or something?
Yeah, I think
Or do they normally keep it to four?
It's like four or five actors. Yeah. There's 10 best picture nominees, I think. You know. Yeah, you're right. It is like, what are you going to delete? What are you going to keep in?
But, like, had Uncut Gems been released in, like, 2018 or 20... Well, 2020 is different because...
Because Wonder Woman might win an Oscar.
Yeah. But, like, had you released it almost any other year, like, I would say it probably would have gotten nominated and had a good shot at winning
an award. Sure. So. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you watched the movie.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you enjoyed it.
It wasn't, like, the ending... Like I said, stressful a little bit. Wasn't as bad as what I was thinking it was going to be. I think I was just, like, the first time I watched it, I was unprepared for what it was going to feel like. And I, like, was not digging it because I was just looking for, like, a good movie to watch. So I stopped watching it, had the bad connotation in my head that it was going to be like that the entire film. It wasn't. And the ending wasn't as, I mean, it was still stressful, but it was not as bad as, you know, as what I hyped it up to be in my head. So.
I remember the car ride home with my dad and my brother watching it and just being like, oh, what a downer. Like, what a terrible movie. Like, as in, like, a great movie, but, like, what a terrible character. Like, a sad character.
Yeah.
It was a real... Stressful, yes. Chaotic, yes. But, I mean, very impactful, I think. Very impactful movie.
We should do a chaos/chaotic... counter for this episode. I feel like I said it so many times.
Yeah, I know. Well, we talked about
a lot.
We're thank you for listening. We are, as we mentioned before, doing a much less adult movie, much less chaotic movie.
Yes. Yep.
Next week,
very family friendly.
We're going with the Lego Movie. I talked about, or not on the podcast, but I talked with some people about wanting to do an animation because I do think that animation is just lumped into one category of Pixar movies, you know, and it's so much bigger than that. And one of my favorite animated movies of recent years was The Lego Movie from 2014, which, wow, that feels like a long time
ago. Yeah, the 2014 classic, 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. With a star-studded cast.
It's a very good movie in more ways than one. And yeah, we're excited to talk about it next week.
Dude, this movie's so good. I can't wait to watch.
Any last words?
Yeah, like I said at the beginning, continue to share and review. Leave a comment because it helps so much. but yeah, again, you know, we could say this every time that we make an episode. We appreciate all the support. All the growth that we've been getting in the past few episodes has been awesome, and it's been really encouraging for both of us. So yeah, we can't thank you enough, and we hope that you continue to enjoy what we're making. So
yeah, you guys have a good week, and we'll see you next.
Enjoy the Lego Movie.
Bye.